Welcome to Sky Talkers. Here are your hosts, Charlotte and Caitlin.
Hello, and welcome to Sky Talkers. I'm your host, Charlotte.
Hey, everyone. I'm your other host, Caitlin, and welcome to this week's discussion where we're talking all about The Acolyte Episode 7, Choice. This episode aired on July 9th, 2024. It was directed once again by Koganada, and it was written by Charmaine Zagrate, Jen Richards, and Jasmine Flournoy. And guys, we finally made it back to Brendoc. We knew this was coming. We knew it was going to hurt for everyone, just like it did in episode 3. And yeah, it continued to hurt.
I was telling Caitlin before we started, I feel very like overwhelmed by this episode. I don't really know where I stand with it. I feel like I am very in the weeds. So I'm looking forward to chatting about it because I feel like I need to chat about it.
It's interesting comparing it to last week where I immediately put the episode on again to watch it. And we recorded pretty quickly, like the next morning, basically. Yeah. That was due to some extenuating factors as well. But I think you and I were just so ready to talk about that episode. And this one, after I watched it the first time, I really just kind of sat with it for a while. And I didn't rewatch it again immediately, really, until the next day. It was like I just needed to take it in. And it's kind of strange because I think we all knew this episode was coming. We all knew that it was going to show us the Jedi's perspective and that, you know, a character like Sol was going to have his fall from grace. We all knew that that was coming. So it's weird that it still felt so overwhelming, you know?
Yeah. It really is. And I'm glad that we didn't record immediately. We're recording this on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Episode aired on Tuesday. Usually we're on Wednesday. The reason why we didn't record yesterday is because we were very busy. And then I also went to an event where I got to see Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So that was last night. So that's why we couldn't record last night. But yeah, and that was a great experience. But it was nice to have the day, I guess, to like digest. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we've had an article come out on Nerdist that is this big explainer article from Leslie Headland that kind of talks through a lot of the choices in the episode. And she expounds about a lot of different things that I don't know if they needed clarification, but it's really cool that she's able to talk about them openly. So I'm going to link that article in the show notes and we'll probably be referencing it throughout our conversation.
Yeah, it's a long interview. It's the longest one I think she's given so far. I thought there was one that came out last week about episode 6, shortly after we recorded, actually. So that's why you don't hear it referenced in that discussion. But I thought that one was long. This one about episode 7, Choice, it's just, the thing just kept going. They just kept talking. Leslie just kept explaining. Charlotte and I were talking about this before we started, that on one hand, it's nice to have a creator kind of be so open about their vision for the show and explaining what their intent was in a lot of these things. But on the other hand, I think there's also obviously a very real argument that once you put a piece of art, a piece of media into the world, it also belongs to the audience in a big way too. And I think that there's kind of a fine line between explaining what your vision was, explaining what your intent was, and then kind of letting a thing have a life of its own. And I kind of wonder where that line is here with Leslie, but I also really just like hearing from creators. So I can't say that I'm too mad at it, even though it is a lot of explaining of like even backstories and things like that, that of certain characters that I don't think are ever really going to be explored in the show because I just don't think they need to be. But anyway, it's definitely worth the read. I will say that I enjoyed reading it. But yeah, there's just been a lot to digest.
Yeah. What was your initial reaction beyond, oh my God, this is a lot to digest about this episode?
I think, like I said, I think we all knew that Sol's fall from grace was coming. And we all, me especially, just fell so in love with Master Sol. And Lee Jung Jae's performance has just been so incredible that we knew this was going to hurt. And I kind of was comparing this in our earlier discussions to what happens with Luke in The Last Jedi, Luke Skywalker, and how, for me, Luke Skywalker is my favorite Star Wars character. And so when I first saw The Last Jedi and was unprepared for what was going to happen in The Last Jedi, it hurt so bad. It was so hard. If you go, I don't recommend, well, I guess I kind of recommend going back and listening to those first Last Jedi discussions, but I think you can really tell that I'm having a hard time with accepting this fallible version of Luke Skywalker. And, you know, however many years out now, I think it was such an incredible choice what they did with the character of Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. But it was so hard to kind of reconcile that. And that's kind of how I feel about Soul. Even though I knew that it was coming, it feels similar to that emotion I felt with Luke Skywalker of like, I loved you so much and you just seemed so good, but I knew that this dark thing was coming and now I have it and I'm sad about it.
Yeah, I feel like we all knew it was coming. I'm not experiencing the same emotions that you are about it. Mm-hmm. I feel like my takeaway from this episode in particular is less what I feel like the internet is taking away from it, which is really confusing to me, which is, oh my God, the Jedi are evil.
Yeah.
That is not my takeaway at all. I think what the show did specifically in this flashback is show that everyone's perspective, like, terrible things happened. I don't think we've really come away with a one villain. I think you obviously look at Master Soul differently, mm-hmm. and especially his interactions with May later and his interactions with Osha. I think you gain perspective, right? Of course. But I feel like everything is so nuanced. Yeah. And every Jedi character that we're introduced to, I fully understand what they were dealing with, I guess. And I was surprised because I feel like in our previous episodes, we had said that Indara didn't seem like she was super guilty in the same way that Kel Naka does.
Yeah, like how they were all responding.
Yeah, and Torben too. And it seemed like Indara wasn't really responding in the same way as the others. And it turns out it's because she comes out kind of scot-free. I know that she does kill accidentally all of the witches, which Leslie does confirm in that Nerdist article. That was not my takeaway from the episode, honestly. I didn't really think the witches died when she removed the witches from Kel Naka's head from the Force, mm-hmm. and all the witches tumbled over. My perspective when I was watching was, oh, they're just like defeated based off of that power,
yeah.
but not necessarily dead. But Leslie said that they did die. So I guess that is something that she should feel guilty about. But I also don't think that she was like standing right next to the witches when they died. So I don't even know if she knows that that happened. I'm saying all this, but then it's like, oh, but then she also wanted to lie to the council, mm-hmm. and Soul wanted to tell the truth. And I think that is what makes me think that Soul's like not the villain, is Soul was like ready to tell the truth about what happened. I just don't think there's a villain. And I didn't get the sense that, oh my God, the takeaway is the Jedi are evil and the Jedi are bad. And that's what Leslie Headland's trying to do. Like, no, that's not my takeaway at all. And instead, I understand this young kid who just wanted to go home and made stupid decisions. And Kel Naka innocent.
Kel Naka honestly is the one who is bottom of the totem pole, I would say.
Totally.
Which
we didn't really learn that much about Kel Naka, let's be honest.
That's almost like one of my critiques, is that I feel like when Soul and Torben and Indara were having these conversations about things, Kel Naka's not there.
The Wookiee problem.
It is the Wookiee problem. What really had me laughing is what I found myself thinking about when Kel Naka was possessed by the witches is I was thinking, what are they saying to him? Are all the witches speaking in Shriwook in this vision? Because I was envisioning it similar to what Anisea does with Torben, that she's right there in the vision with him, talking to him in the other place in the Force, or wherever we want to call that void, I guess, that he was. So I was wondering, what are they saying to Kel Naka during all of this? I don't know why. It was kind of funny. I do think I came away with the same feeling as you about the episode overall, though, about how, yes, it still hurt to see a character like Soul, who I love so much, kind of, again, his fall from grace. But it was expected. And I don't think the same way that we can look at a character like Chimer and understand that he is not wholly evil in the same way that a character like perhaps Palpatine is, I think it's important to look at characters like Jedi and also the institution like the Jedi Order and understand that they are not wholly good as well, but that there are all of these nuances, all of these shades of gray within all of these characters and all of their perspectives on the world and the choices and that they've made in the past that they've inevitably fallen down for better or for worse. And I think it is good to read Leslie's kind of overall vision about the show, about this episode particularly, because I think it does kind of set up well for our discussion. So this is from the Nerdist article, and the interviewer says, going into this episode, the show definitely suggested that the Jedi might have done something truly terrible on Brendok, but I think this episode showed that all of their actions were either genuinely noble, totally defensible, or at least understandable mistakes. What was the thematic purpose of raising the possibility of hidden Jedi crimes if you were then going to reveal that they were flawed rather than evil? And then this is Leslie's response. She says, I'm so glad it read that way for you. It's a show about the bad guys in every sense of that word. And because my previous work before coming into the Star Wars world was almost always concerned with some sort of morality, immorality, or amorality, it was always about characters running through a spectrum of those things as opposed to having a good character and a bad character, a good girl and a bad girl, a nice guy and a womanizer. That those characters could be all of those things at once. So it was important to me. I'm glad you got that impression from watching the episode that the Jedi are not performing evil acts. They're not being willfully oppressive. They're not manipulating or tricking anyone. So if the show, with all the other characters, is exploring the spectrum of morality, the stranger being a great example, May being a great example, it felt to me that the Jedi also had to have that particular treatment. The Jedi could not not be a part of that thematic element of the show. What did you think about this response, Charlotte?
I mean, I think it's, I'm glad that she said that, because I do feel like in the first 24 hours, there was a lot of discussions about, at least I saw in fandom, which I don't, just as like a BTS thing, I don't love referring to on the podcast, but I do think it's important to note the like immediate like sort of fan reaction that we saw. And I think the immediate fan reaction was the Jedi suck. We hate the Jedi, you know, and I don't think that's what she was trying to say. And I think that people were thinking that that's what Leslie was trying to say. That was not my takeaway at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that she clarified that. I also think it's interesting that she said the spectrum of morality in accordance with the stranger and May being a great example. I think for me from this episode, one of my biggest takeaways was that I understand May's vengeance so much more, mm-hmm. which is what I really wanted to understand too. It was a want of mine to understand her character more. And the fact that she witnessed her mother being killed when her mother was only trying to protect her, the mix up that happened between Sol and Sol gets May and Osha like mixed up in that moment too. And I feel like because of that, I now view May, I never viewed May as like super evil ever. That was not something that I was willing to do, but I feel like I understand her motivations so much more. And it's also kind of sad to me when I look back and I think about how this stranger Chimer might have been like, ugh, whatever, you don't really care that much about this. And I don't know, I'm kind of rambling here, but I really liked that she clarified this, I guess, or said this, because I think what I'm interested the most in stories as well is the duality and the ability to be both a good character and a bad character at the same time. I think that's so interesting. And I think that Star Wars could do that better and do that more. Mm-hmm. And this is a good show to explore that. Also, I wanted to say that throughout our discussions on this podcast, we've referenced Rashomon, Akira Kurosawa's movie. I feel like I'm like always introing this. And I think one of the things that we talked about was that one of the takeaways from that movie is that when we're focused on a single crime and people's perspectives on a single crime, there's validity in each perspective. And I feel like that's exactly what we got in this episode. We reached it. This is the Rashomon effect in practice. Mm-hmm. And I think it's uncomfortable, and that's kind of part of it.
I think it's good to kind of lead into discussing soul, actually, probably first in thinking about that perspective and the multiple truths being true at once, because we see obviously it's a much younger soul here, right? And we get to hear a little bit about how he doesn't have a Padawan yet, how he's kind of freely giving Torben answers about what they're doing on the planet and things like that. But soul is really kind of running this mission once he finds the girls, right? And I think Sol's downfall is that he kind of refuses to slow down and think about the bigger picture of what's actually going on. Because everything that we see from Sol's perspective when he first meets the girls, he only sees, he comes in at the moment where May is the one torturing the butterfly, right? In the very beginning, he doesn't see Osha do it as well. And then later he spies on them during their training session where Mother Anisea, you know, attacks the girls and praises May's response, but not Osha's. He doesn't see the larger scene that we saw in episode 3 of the girls are actually fighting, and you know, there's that whole sequence of events, and he sees part of the ascension ceremony, but not, he just sees them preparing in front of a giant pit, which, to Sol's credit, is pretty ominous. I'll say that giant pit that they're all in front of. So I can't blame him for being a little concerned.
Wait, can we stop on the giant pit for a second? I know that I think there's so much conversation about like the vergence and the force that happened. Was the giant pit part of that?
I had always wondered what the giant pit was. And then in Leslie's article, when she, in her interview, the Nerdist one, where she was talking about the virgins, and she goes into a lot of depth about what the virgins actually is. And she clarifies that the virgins is a natural occurrence on Brendok. It's not Osha and May themselves. I think I had kind of thought that they would be the virgins, similar to the way that Rey and Kylo are the dyad themselves. But no, the virgins is naturally occurring on Brendok. So now I kind of think the pit could be the virgins, right, where they got that power from. But I don't know.
I think there's something there about worshiping the giant pit. The big hole. I don't really know what to think about that. I think my brain immediately goes to like the dark side hole that Rey fell down in The Last Jedi. It's just interesting, these symbolism pieces that we get. I don't really know what to do with them. I'm just going to put a pin in that for later.
Yeah, I agree. And this is what Sol is watching, right? And so you look at these moments from Sol and you can kind of understand why he is worried about the girls, right? About the twins.
He's coming up on every single thing at the absolute worst moment.
Yeah, exactly. But and so that inherently is not wrong. And he even talks to Indara about this, about, you know, if he truly believes that they're in danger, they are Jedi. Who is helping these children if not the Jedi, right? And I think that if we want the Jedi to be good guys, which I think at their foundation they are, right? Then these are the heroes of the story. And they believe themselves to be heroes too. I think that's also important. The Jedi believe themselves to be the peacekeepers and good people throughout the galaxy, right? And Sol has a point, but he's kind of refusing to consider that there are other things happening here. And I think Indara is trying to impart that to him, especially like when they're talking about the symbol on May's head, the tattoo that she gets after she takes the ascension ceremony. And Sol is like, well, Osha didn't have one. Maybe they tried to force her to do it and she resisted. And it's like, no, you just interrupted the ceremony. That's why. Yeah. And Osha had said yes. Like, she was going to get it. She didn't. And the irony, of course, is that Osha didn't actually want to do it. But the reason, it's not this malicious reason that Sol is thinking it is. It's literally that they interrupted the ceremony. And then even when they're talking about the mark, and Sol immediately calls it, you know, dark magic. And they've like, it's almost like they branded her with this tattoo. And Indara is like, my guy, all these other cultures around the world have ceremonial markings. We can't just assume that this is automatically bad, you know? And Sol is so, he's so tunnel vision about things in this episode. And that is ultimately his downfall.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because in that conversation that you're referencing, Indara says her coven will never let her leave. They're so insular, so strange. And I think her saying so strange opens up a little bit of a debate between them, between Indara and Sol, about what Sol thinks is a problem and Indara is questioning, right? Ceremonial markings are customary in many cultures of the galaxy. I worry she's not safe. That's true. She might have resisted being marked. This is what you were saying before, but I love that this ends with Indara saying, do not confuse what Osha wants with what you want. So I think I'm interested in exploring, what do you think Sol wanted in the beginning of this episode on their noble mission to Brendok post-hyperspace disaster searching for virgins?
Well, I think we should start and explain what the great hyperspace disaster was.
Sure.
If you're unfamiliar, I know we've been talking about the High Republic a lot. Obviously, this series is very inspired by the publishing book initiative, the High Republic. And the hyperspace disaster, the great hyperspace disaster, actually happens in book one, Light of the Jedi, of the High Republic era. And basically what it is it's this huge crash of ships traveling through hyperspace, which is not supposed to happen. And basically it comes down to the fact that a ship can enter hyperspace anywhere it wants. And it ends up crashing with a ship that's kind of, it'd be like someone coming onto the highway, the interstate, like right in the middle of the interstate, like not on an exit or anything. They just appear smack dab in the middle of a 6-lane interstate and everyone else that's traveling on the interstate crashes into it. And it's this huge rippling thing because both of the ships are torn apart and they're big ships. They're like starfighter ships. It's not like a little tiny, like it's not like a little Honda Accord. It's like an expedition, like, really, or like a school bus.
It's like a bus.
Yeah, it's a school bus. Tractor trailers. Yeah. Massive. And then all of these, the planets that were near the disaster when it happened in hyperspace, many of them are actually destroyed by kind of the debris and also I think like the energy that comes out of it. And then because they're traveling through hyperspace, as the ships are torn apart, the pieces of the ship, the debris, they end up getting ejected out of hyperspace like randomly throughout the galaxy. So it's like they're all getting off at different exits randomly off the interstate, and they end up killing a lot of people and impacting a lot of planets. And there are planets that are actually destroyed because of the hyperspace disaster. So to learn that Brendok was one of these planets makes a lot of sense in the timeline of the High Republic. I thought it was a nice call out because that's obviously where that's like the first chapter of the very first book of the High Republic. So it was kind of a good callback. And I think it's interesting to go back to your question of what Sol wants, because I saw some people talking about how Sol wants a Padawan and that is kind of pushing him in this connection with Osha, and that they were kind of pulling that from that conversation he has with Indara at the very beginning, you know, where they're kind of having a little friendly banter, I would categorize it as, about how Sol versus Indara is talking to Torben about what they're doing here. And Indara's like, I'm the master. I want him to search for these answers himself, not just have it handed to him. And to me, it was kind of jokey, like in good fun of like, that's why I have the Padawan and you don't.
Yeah, me too.
And Sol is kind of like, whatever. To me, it didn't really feel like Sol was like, well, one day I'll have a Padawan, or when I get my own Padawan. You know, it didn't feel like that was a motivation for him at the time. I do think that Sol is genuine, that he felt this connection to Osha, and that it, like I said, it kind of tunnel visioned everything for him, that once he felt her in the Force, that was all he could focus on. And that really goes back to what Chimere said last week to Osha about, remember when Osha's saying like, oh, my master's so strong in the Force, he'll find you. And Chimere's like, no, 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 no. That's your strength that he's sensing in the Force. It's not his. And I think that really tracks with Sol's immediate response to OSHA here when they first meet on Brendock.
Yeah, I also didn't read that exchange between Indara and Sol anything but jokey, but at the same time, it might live within him that he isn't a Jedi Master.
Yeah,
that he isn't a Jedi Master. And then in order to be, you know, go to the next level, we know this so well, right? With what it means to be a Jedi, the concept of a master and apprentice is so intrinsic to advancing within the Jedi Order that I do feel like there's probably a sense of, in order for me to be a better Jedi, I probably need to take on a Padawan like Indara. And I think that that's probably there in that conversation, even if it wasn't serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I think my takeaway from this is that Sol's immediate connection to OSHA is weird. I don't know. I wonder if the show is going to answer this. Like, what is it about OSHA, not May, that makes people kind of like go crazy about how cool she is? And I think she is super cool, but there is a sense that it's like, oh my gosh, well, Chimer is like obsessed with her. And then Sol was obsessed with her too. And like, they kind of didn't, he didn't really care that much about May. I understand that there was a sense of May wasn't branded and you can look at it through that lens. And that's what the show told us. But there is something interesting over at the very end when, you know, the episode's called Choice. I think Sol makes a couple of choices, but the number one choice, I think, is when you have the two platforms literally balancing a balancing act. You have to choose one because you can't choose both. Mm-hmm. That was my takeaway from that, by the way. Not that he was purposely choosing one. It was that he could only choose one, given if he wanted to save one. It was either they both die. It was a trolley problem. They both die or they get one, right? And he chose OSHA. And I think, of course he chose OSHA, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? He couldn't save both, but of course he was going to pick OSHA.
Yeah.
And what does that, and then there's the, I think what I was thinking too is there's perhaps that darker part of him that knew that May had seen him kill Anisea.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's a horrible situation, and it's one that he and Torben created and led to this like awful end.
Right. And I think that was terrible. And I find the, like I just said, I find the connection that Sol feels towards OSHA odd. Don't really know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there was a lot of instances in which Sol showed the like quote unquote true Jedi mindset. Like when Sol enters the fight with Coral and like all hell breaks loose, you know, he doesn't fight back. I think that's interesting. And it already maybe the guilt is taking him over, I guess, in that moment. The shot of him fighting where he jumps and he like he's fighting Kilnaka, but he jumps and he disengages his lightsaber and it's like in slow-mo. It's so freaking cool. Mm-hmm. This is one of those occasions of like, okay, that was a bad situation, but like everywhere else he's like trying. And I think ultimately what I like about Star Wars is that the concept of making a mistake and then continuing to try to right your mistake is so within the story that I felt like Sol was sort of doing that immediately. And the fact that he was going to tell the truth and then Indara stopped him, I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you come away immediately, you're kind of like, oh, Sol is the... He did the quote-unquote worst things in this episode, right? He kills Anisea. He makes the choice between May and OSHA. But then he wants to turn himself in. And Indara is the one who – we were talking about Indara coming away kind of the cleanest of all of them. But then we get to this moment here where she's the one that orchestrates this concealment of what happened. And I think you listen to her and – she's so like she almost kind of attacks Sol in that moment and is, you know, like this, you guys weren't listening to me and this is what happened, these consequences. And now we have to deal with it. And she makes a judgment call on what is best for OSHA in that moment. And I think that I understand her logic of this girl has just lost everything. And now you're going to tell her that the person she was also connected to was responsible for all of it and is probably going to be thrown in prison or executed or killed by or banished from the order by the Jedi Council. Now she's going to be totally alone. No, I think Indara is doing that because she believes it's in Osha's best interest, not Sol's, right? I don't think at that moment she really kind of cares what is happening to Sol or Torben. Kelnaka's not in the scene, so I don't know. But she's really doing that for Osha. I think it's easy to look at this and obviously understand that these choices that both Sol and Indara make, Sol to actually go to end up making the choices he did of killing Anisea and making the choice between Mei and Osha, and then Indara being the one to make the choice to conceal all of it from both the council and Osha, it sets them all on these paths. And I think Indara really believes that this is for Osha. But then what we know is that Osha can never ultimately let go of this grief and resentment. And she has carried it with her for forever. And it is ultimately what led to her not being able to be a Jedi. I'm excited to go back and watch the series because there are some of those conversations, that conversation between Osha and Sol about that forgiveness. And, you know, Osha saying, it's not your fault. I've forgiven you for that. You tried to teach me how to let go, and I just wasn't a very good student. And Sol is sitting there knowing that he's been living off of this lie for 16 years now. And how can he tell her the truth now? In the same way that Anisea ultimately wanted to give Osha the choice to do what she wanted with her life, to be in the Witch Coven or to be a Jedi, the Jedi should have also given that choice to Osha of knowing everything that she knows now. Does she still want to be a Jedi? And they should have given that to her. But of course they're not, because they conceal things, and that is the story as well, that things were hidden, and Osha, the entire foundation of Osha's life and her relationship with Sol has been built on a lie, and everything is going to come out, and what will Osha do with that truth? And that feels like a bit of a ramble that I just went on, so I'm not really sure how to end it. But I will say, when you were talking about Sol and the fight, I was thinking about that other important piece that when Anisea is still there, and Coral is the one, I think, who kind of draws her weapon first, and then Torben draws his weapon, and Sol doesn't, which I think is important in our kind of all the shades of Sol, the good choices that he makes and the horrible choices that he makes as well. He doesn't pull his weapon in that moment and tries, I think, to stop Torben as well. It's only until Anisea starts to transform into the Force, this thing that is really scary looking, honestly, and he doesn't know what it is, that's when he reacts and draws his lightsaber. And I do think you see that immediate horror of what he saw happening and then how he reacted and what the consequence of that was. And I think, to your point of him not fighting back against Coral after that, he is racked with guilt. And this is also after he realizes that he has mixed up Mei and Osha. And what does that really mean?
Let's talk a little bit about the moment that Sol kills Anisea, because it is pretty devastating. He does make a mistake. I just want to say that up front. It's a mistake. But I think if it were me and the person I was talking to turned into a ghoul, and then the girl that I was worried about her safety started to emulate that ghoulish nature, okay, I think I would freak out. And unfortunately, I think I would try to, like, I don't know, do something with my hands or something to, like, touch the ghoul. Okay. I don't know.
I would run. Well, I guess I wouldn't be a Jedi. I would run away.
Yeah. I think that the purpose of going into that fortress, while I think that I just want to be very clear. I think they made a lot of mistakes. I think that they treated the Witch Coven like a scary, quote unquote, strange, like Indara says, cult, when it's sort of unclear whether or not that's actually true. I don't think the twins were in danger at all. There's a lot of miscommunication that happens, right? I feel like there's a sense of, like, understanding, I guess, with the reaction that Sol has with that, even though it's because it is such a like a snap decision that he makes. Mm-hmm. I think that people can compare it to certain real life attributes, but like it's kind of impossible. It's sort of a false equivalency because we're talking about lightsabers and ghosts and like witch magic. I don't know. It's just spooky. And I think what's the reaction when something is really like a person totally transforms?
Well, I don't know. It's all snowballed to this point, right? All of these confirmation biases that Sol has created about who the witches are, it all comes down to this moment. And so to see kind of the climax of what he thinks he believes about these people happen in Anisea becoming a ghoul ghost force is startling. So it is understandable his reaction, but his reaction is only because he's refused this whole time to slow down. I do think there was another to read from Leslie's interview a little bit. I think it's pertinent to this part of our conversation. It's a question where she's talking about the coven as a whole and like the virgins and the force and all of that. It's a very long answer. I'm not going to read all of it, but there's this part at the bottom where she kind of talks about the Jedi and how they're perceiving the witches and also about the virgins itself and kind of the natural element of the virgins. I won't read the question because it doesn't really make sense because I'm not reading the whole answer, but here's what Leslie has to say about this moment with the Ascension ceremony and then also how the Jedi are trying to understand the witches. She says, "I think that in the Ascension ceremony, you see how they're, the witches, utilizing not just wherever the virgins may be physically on the planet, but the eclipse. These powerful movements of heavenly bodies and whatever is under the earth, that type of thing. What is meant to be expressed there is that they're drawing the power from nature, magic, and the force. So we never sort of go, they're using magic the way that the Night Sisters are. They're using the force even though they're not Jedi. To me, it felt more interesting to show a group of people, a group of witches, having abilities that the Jedi could not pinpoint, that the Jedi aren't going, oh, well, that's magic. Oh, well, that's the force. That's one of the reasons the Jedi gets so thrown off by what they're seeing. It's so unpredictable. It's difficult for them to categorize and then report back to the council. The Jedi are trying to get as much information as they can, but each time they interact with the witches, they're getting different impressions of what the coven is doing." And I think that I don't know. I think that kind of sums up what we were talking about how
totally
there's not this way to categorize things. And Leslie has talked about this in other interviews as well, about how even in our previous discussions about the use of the word Sith or the Knights of Ren or like the power of two, the rule of two, things like that. She talks about how the Jedi are operating from their own vocabulary and that there are certain things about the galaxy that they are not aware of at this time. And so they wouldn't use the same type of vocabulary that people in the sequel trilogy or even in the prequel trilogy would be using, because remember, we're 100 years before that. So these things are still not set in stone. And I think they maybe could have done a better job of that in the show, but I think this is another example of that. Like, the Jedi only know the Night Sisters, and the Night Sisters are witches. They use magic. But now we have this group that's kind of using magic and the Force, and we've never encountered that before. So what is this? And so that also, I think, kind of relates to Sol's reaction to seeing what Mother Anisea is doing, because while we know how much of a mother Anisea is, you know, she says in the episode, "I'm acting as a mother, not as a leader here, and I'm going to let Osha do what she wants." Her power is scary. Like, what she does to Torben earlier, I wouldn't exactly say that. Like, that's kind of
that's not dark. Good. It's scary.
It's dark. Yes. You know what I mean? It's I can't say that she's always, you know, acting on the quote unquote light side, right? And that seems like a step further than what the Jedi do as far as like a Jedi mind trick is kind of, I don't know. I think we all have a little bit of fun with the Jedi mind trick, but to a degree, it's what Mother Anisea is doing as well. But I would say Mother Anisea is doing it much more. It's turned up a lot of notches what she ends up doing to Torben. So, and like her eyes turn black. We saw May's eyes turn black. That's what happened to Torben as well. So, of course, Sol is going to jump to this conclusion. But like I said, it's all been snowballed to this moment. And this is the moment where, right, you know, he kills Anisea and she tells him, I was going to let her go. Hurts.
Yeah. So she chose mother. Mm-hmm. In a previous episode, I made a list of questions that I wanted Sol to answer. Okay.
All right.
And 95% of them were answers. I just want to go through them again. Okay. First question is May and Osha's origins, why and why the Jedi were intrigued. So I think we got that. Leslie clarified that the twins were not the virgins in the Force, but it's interesting that the Jedi were intrigued by the concept of exploring them as the virgins. And I also think it's interesting that we learned that May and Osha are basically carbon copies of each other. They have the same Force signature, which feels like a mistake, feels like something happened in whatever happened to create them.
Not to interrupt you, but I just
wanna, no interrupt.
I just want to add away. This in because I've actually been thinking about it while we were talking, and then when it's my turn to talk, I keep forgetting to bring it up. But the fact that they have the same Force signature, the exact same symbionts, but everyone is drawn to Osha, not May. Like Sol,
it's wild.
Chimera drawn to Osha, but if they have the same Force signature, then wouldn't their presence in the Force be the same? But it's not really feeling like that either with how our characters are reacting. Just anyway, put a pin in that.
I thought that's why Sol mistook
May for
Osha. Yeah.
But then Chimera doesn't.
But is it just because they're older and they've like verged on their own paths and Osha has pulled at that thread? I don't know.
I don't think so, because if anything, Osha has tamped down. She's ignored the Force for however long. And Sol also, I think for me, and I think Leslie kind of touches on this in the interview, but to me, this confirms that Sol did not recognize May immediately when they did the switcheroo. So I think he still is thinking that that's Osha for part of their time on the ship. And it's only a little bit later, and maybe with Basil's help, that he realizes that that's actually May.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting in our conversation last episode about the word chimera, mm-hmm, and what that means. You know, there is something, and this is not a one-to-one a comparison at all, but there is a medical term called chimerism that has to do with twins and like the same cells or absorption of the other twin or something like that.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. So in the last episode, we discussed how the name Chimer, Q-I-M-I-R, sounds like Chimer, which is a mythological creature that is several different creatures at once. We learn in this episode that there's something weird about the twins in terms of how they were created, whether or not they're carbon copies. Were they, I think we're getting it too in the weeds a little bit about like, are they the same egg? Like what's going on there? And then I think medically, the term, the like root word chimer is used to describe like twins that are, I don't know. I'm so bad with science. It's actually insane. I look it up and I'm like, I don't really get it. But it's like twins that share certain phenotypes. Okay.
Oh, wow. Like, phenotype's a big word.
I know. It's just, there's a lot of similarities, I guess, with, we're dealing with this word chimer. We're dealing with like weirdness about identical twins. I think that there's a, like, it's very clear to me that the word chimer, C-H-I-M-E-R, was like put on the board as something to explore thematically. Mm-hmm. Just to go back to my original list of the Sol questions, why the Jedi were intrigued. Like, I would be intrigued too. This is weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so then the next question that we got answered is what actually happened that night? We found out. And why did they go crazy? We found out. And then why did they cover it up? We also found that out. And all of these answers are so much more nuanced than I think that we could have even imagined. Mm-hmm. But the last question, and this goes to what you were talking about 5 minutes ago, that we didn't get answered, is why the witches were exiled from their previous place. And I don't really have anything really more to say beyond we didn't find that out, because I think if we did find that out, then it would change our perception of how we, the audience, view the witches versus how Soul views the witches. Because the Soul's takeaway is that the witches are harmful. And then our takeaway as the audience is, no, 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 you're like, you're getting it wrong. You're not seeing the full picture. Mm-hmm. But if we got that last piece, we might understand more about their history. It would, right now, they're shrouded in a lot of mystery that is helpful for us to discover this type of nuance. But if we found that out, I think it might change things a little bit for us.
That's it. I kind of don't think we're going to find out.
I don't think so either. I'm not saying that we are. Yeah, I really don't think we are.
Yeah, for me, it kind of comes down to the fact that they were othered. And
yes.
They needed a place to go where no one was. And then they perhaps felt drawn to this virgins as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. I feel like I didn't underscore that well enough, in that I think that us finding out that they were exiled gives us more sympathy towards them. Mm-hmm. And because of that fact, I don't think we're going to find out exactly why they are, unless it is something to do with how the twins were created, because it seems sort of vague, even in the interview that Leslie gave for Nerdist, about whether or not that was something that was going to be explored in total. It seems like we're going to find out more next week about it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's my question. Where do you think we end up next week? Because I kind of think the finale takes place either on the unknown planet or back on Brundock, actually. I think we could go back to Brundock and have the final confrontation between everyone.
Could be both.
Yeah. Because I think the thing that I keep thinking about is that we talked about this like an hour ago now at this point, and I think you were talking about like how we now view May through a different lens, and I think we always expected to, of understanding her more. I just keep thinking about her first meeting with Soul in episode 2, and the last time she would have seen him is when he killed Anisea, because she was there. She actually knows what happened. And then in episode 5, when we have that eclipse of May and Osha, when they switch places, and May is saying, no, they brainwashed you. And it's true. Mm. They have.
They did.
They've lied to her for all these years and let her hold this huge resentment towards May and the grief she feels about May and her family this whole time, and have let her believe that. And then she didn't even become a Jedi in the end. And I'm just so curious to see, one, how Osha actually finds out the truth. I think you and I have talked a lot offline about like if she is able to tap into May's subconscious with the help of the Cortosis helmet and the sensory deprivation. I think that Chimere knows what happened. I feel like May would have told him as either Chimere or the stranger when he was masked, or he got it from her mind or something like that. Although Chimere has said that he can't read minds. So I kind of feel like May just...
Them being the same force signature, though, could lend that ability to bond together. I mean, is that the power of two? And the fact that they are the same force signature, like they can do something, they can, I don't know, access each other's abilities somehow because of that shared genotype. I don't even know. Again, I'm throwing around science.
You said work. Phenotype last time, Charlotte.
I know. Phenotype, genotype, what's the next?
Mitochondria, powerhouse of the cell.
I was an English major. Let it be. Okay.
I will. Okay, here's kind of a little bit of a crazy speculation I have. So also in Leslie's interview, she kind of basically confirms that Coral is still alive. We don't see her. Number one, Coral is so funny to me. The way that she announces things, like when they're going up for the girls to get tested and she yells out, she goes, "We're here."
I know.
And then I even had to chuckle a little right before she starts the possession of Kelnaka, which sounds bad to say, but you know, she's like, "You shouldn't have brought him here." And Sol is like, "Oh no, Torben, like fortify your mind." And Coral goes, "Not him."
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of funny to me. But we actually don't see her when all the other witches are possessing Kelnaka. So I think it would be easy speculation that she is still alive. And when I was thinking about the idea that May and Osha could connect to each other still, especially once Osha taps back into the Force, I kept thinking about in the very first episodes where she has that vision of May after she crashes the ship and she's running through the woods, right? And she asks younger Vision May if she's the one that killed Indara. And Vision May says, yes. And that is true. That is what happened. But May's eyes in that time turn black, just like as if she was being possessed, or perhaps that's our indicator of the type of force magic that the witches use. So I almost wonder if Coral has been around this whole time and has also kind of been putting pieces into play. And maybe she brought that vision to Osha about May in the very first episode. I don't know. I just wanted to put that out there because I think it's the fact that May's eyes turn black, just like Kalnaka's, Torben's, Anisea, and young May in episode 7 did, that feels like a calling card of the witches. And we haven't really seen May use that power. So I don't know. Just food for thought.
I think it's good that you're outlining that because I think Mother Coral is very suspicious and she is funny. Like you said, Mother Coral is alive. I don't know what's going to happen next. I feel like in that interview with Leslie, she says that, I don't know, she sort of hints that there's more to her. I think when the episode is called Choice, we have to think about all the different, like what that word even means. And for me, I think there's something that's happening in this episode about free will. I think initially the conversation that happens between Indara and Sol about how to be a master to Torben, that is sort of in jest. Indara takes Sol aside and asks, and sort of is like, you don't agree with how I'm talking to Torben about like why we're here, and sort of easing his worry about the fact that he's homesick. Basically, Indara says that she likes to have Torben seek answers for himself rather than spoon feed the answers to Torben. That's when she says, like, that's why I have a Padawan and you do not. I think in hindsight, it's pretty significant that this conversation happened in the beginning of the episode, because I feel like Indara is calling Sol out on whatever opinions he might hold about steering people directly to the answer he wants to give, aka Sol sort of taking away any sort of free will that someone could have. And I think that's like dramatic, the leap I just made. Okay. But I think overall in this episode entitled Choice, we have to think about we're thinking about Sol's choices that he made in order to snowball us to the very end of the episode. Of course, the major choice that we talked about between choosing May or Osha in this balancing act. But also I think the concept of choice was totally robbed from Osha, and her entire life she thinks that she had it and things just went wrong. I think even with Mother Coral, like you were discussing, she takes away any choice that May could have too. May, I feel like when Coral is like, get angry to yeah. May, and May then sort of taps into whatever anger she has within her. It's kind of cute in a way that she's like screaming. It's like, she's like, have a tantrum, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels like childish, but Coral is encouraging that. I think it goes back to her name sounding like Coral, right? I think in that moment, I feel like Coral allows May for her fear to take over her. And so much so that she regrets starting the fire almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And I think that choice was sort of robbed from her too, because she was just pushed by her power figures, like her mother figure, to tap into this dark part of herself. Again, I think Osha's choice was fully taken away from her. And I think it's interesting that we start the episode with this concept of choice, of like, you can't just spoon feed people answers. It's just, they have to discover things on their own. And I think eventually what we will discover is that somehow within herself, Osha discovered that the Jedi were not for her. That's probably part of the reason why she left the Jedi. We still don't know why that happened. Later, when she's in the Jedi Order, how she left, she says that she tells Chimera that she failed. But from what I feel like within her, she knows that she just didn't have the full choice to join, but she thinks that she had the choice to leave. But I feel like in episode 3, we have this great conversation with Anisea and Osha about, if you want to pull the thread, pull it. I think Osha thinks that she pulled the thread, but I actually don't think she did. I think this choice was made for her.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to be exploring. I think ultimately the show is about May and Osha and all of the things that have brought them apart and what will bring them together. And I think when we talk about Star Wars, we talk about light side, we talk about dark side, we talk about all the different paths you can take and how you can change your path and things like that. Unfortunately, I think the perspective that we see in episode 3 is that Osha thinks that she did as much as she could to like go on her own path, and like this is what happened to her.
Well, it's her entire
her entire family mm-hmm. died because of that path that she chose. But that's not true. That's not true. The path was changed for her.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I just think that the title is more about, I think we're really have zeroed in on it being about soul's choice, but I think it's about choice in general.
Yeah.
The decision to choose your destiny, to decide what your life is going to be like. And this realization that in the past that you actually had no control over it is pretty devastating.
It is. And it, you know, both Anisea and Leslie Headlin have talked about the show being about power and who gets to use it. And that's what Anisea tells May and Osha in episode 3 when, you know, Osha is like, the Jedi are good. And May says the Jedi are bad. And Anisea says it's not about good and bad. It's about power and who gets to use it. And having power means also having the ability to choose and choose for other people as well. And I think that's what we see happening here. It isn't about good and bad for the Jedi or the witches, because we can put those labels on all of their individual choices of good or bad at any given moment. And it comes together into this conglomeration of complicated people who were in a really bad situation and made choices, but who ultimately comes out on top is the Jedi, as far as like the most power, the most influence, the most impactful choices. It's Sol and it's Indara. And that is what the show is about. And so I think if the show is about May and Osha, if we're going to talk about the Frozen of it all again, that it's about the sisters, then our finale feels like it will focus on what they actually get to choose this time. Yep. And how they're going to use their power. Is it going to be together? Is it going to be separately? What happens mm-hmm. now that they both know the truth? Really Osha, because May already knows the truth. She knows that Sol kills Anisea. So, and she knows that she technically started the fire, but that she went for help. She wasn't actually going to leave Osha there. And now it's up to Osha. I've seen some kind of wild theories that May and Osha will become one person at the end. And
I saw that too. And I think it's interesting.
It is interesting. I don't know how I feel about it, because I like both of these characters that don't want to see them become one, because then does it mean is one version, like, is it May that is the overwhelming? Is it Osha that's the overwhelming character, I guess, in the person now? I don't really know. It's kind of weird with me. It's a really fun concept to speculate about, but mm-hmm. I think I ultimately want them to stay separate people.
Yeah.
As we're kind of coming to the end, I feel like there's a lot of like finer details and like character beats we've missed in this discussion. But I did want to bring up a conversation that I keep thinking about between Chimere and May in episode 2, when May is getting the poison to give to Torben. And Chimere says, you know, he talks about how the Jedi only think they have peace, but it's really a lie. And you can actually give Torben what he really needs, which is absolution. And I keep coming back to this conversation because absolution is a pretty religious term, especially in the Christian faith, of forgiveness of sins and also forgiveness of punishment as well. That's kind of the big part of absolution is you don't need to be punished anymore. You've been absolved of your crimes, of your guilt, of the need to be punished. And when May goes to Torben to give that absolution, it's interesting because it's in the form of poison. It's in the form of death, that her forgiveness of Torben can only come from death, or rather Torben's forgiveness of himself can only come through death, because Torben has been punishing himself for 10 years of being in this eternal meditative state. And I feel like that's going to come around into the finale of who will give Sol absolution, because Osha is about to find out the truth, I gather, that it was Sol who killed Anasaya and Sol who lied, well, and Dar too, but she's already gone, and Sol who lied about May starting the fire and killing everyone. So will Chimere encourage her to give absolution to Sol as well? Will she want to do it herself? Will she even offer it to him? Or will it come in the same form as what May gave to Torben? I don't know. I just think it, like, I think it will come back around, because now it's not between Chimere and May like it was in episode 2. Now it's between Chimere and Osha, or rather Osha and Sol. And I don't know. I've just been mulling it over. I don't really have a good conclusion or like thesis statement to it. I just think those are very specific words and a very specific type of conversation. And when I'm thinking about May and Osha, May is the one who, once she finds out Osha is alive, she immediately lets go of this revenge. She's ready to turn herself in. She's ready to go find Osha. She strings up Chimere. She does not care. All that matters is that Osha is alive. And I think for May, if Osha knew the truth and believed May and loved her again, I don't think May would care what happened with Sol. I really don't. Or the Jedi at all. I think she would be like, great, let's go, you and me together forever, baby.
I agree. I feel like we saw her immediately, like, you can parallel that concept with her immediately regretting setting the fire.
Yeah. Which is so interesting, because her ability that we've seen so far to kind of let go is a very Jedi concept. And I think even for her to just having the truth out there is what's important, because she was going to turn herself in. What I think she really wanted from Torben, right? She tells him he can take the poison, or he can actually admit what happened to the High Council. And then when she feels like she's not going to get the truth from Sol again, she starts trying to call the Jedi Order. And I think she was going to turn them in, but then that's when Sol realizes that it's May and he stuns her. Right. So he further keeps it concealed. So I think for May, it's about the truth coming out. But more importantly, it's about Osha believing her. Whereas I don't think that's going to be the same for Osha, especially now that she's with Chimere, who's kind of encouraging her to explore those more emotional feelings of anger, of loss, of fear and desire. But of those other ones, too, I don't think that's going to be her reaction. So I don't know. I also kind of wanted to bring up that conversation again and talk about what it could mean for the finale too.
Totally. I do think that Osha is going to be cemented on the dark side, given the fact that what I just said about how she was robbed of her choice.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the occasion in which she actually might have the choice, even if, I don't know. I feel like Leslie has been so clear about the fact that with Chimere, it has not been manipulation. So it makes me think, how do we think about seduction in terms of the world of choice? I don't really have the answers to that. I think we can talk about that next week. I also feel like in our last episode, in this episode, we didn't do a good enough job of talking about how potentially Vernestra might blame the whole situation on Sol. And if that actually happens, given the fact that she was sort of talking to that one Padawan on Kofar. Sorry. She was talking to that one Padawan on Kofar, talking through whether or not Sol could have done something like this, or he came to that own his conclusion himself. Sol turning off his tracking computer and things in the last episode. Then in this particular episode, we learned so much about Sol and the fact that he killed his mother and Anasaya, that he's guilty, things like that. How do we feel about the fact that this all could potentially be blamed on Sol now that we've learned this piece?
I'm still kind of sad about it.
I am too.
I think a lot of that, the thing is, we've said this before, but I think ultimately whatever happens next week will continue to be concealed by the Jedi Order. So whether it's making Sol a scapegoat for everything, whether he lives or dies, is exiled, banished from the order again. You know, I think whatever it is, it's going to be concealed and no one else will know about it except for whoever survives. That there will be more people carrying this secret story forward again, just like how our four Jedi were carrying the truth of what happened on Brundok with them for so long. And it's interesting to think about if maybe if that forgiveness is given to Sol and then he is ultimately betrayed by the Order, who allows him to die or allows him to be the scapegoat for everything, how like Osha would take that in. Like, let's assume she does forgive him. She comes to that moment where she's able to let go.
Who is she in this situation?
Osha.
May or Osha? Osha.
Osha. If Osha is able to let go, I don't know. She, you know, she's let it go, but she's continuing on this other path. But then for her to see that the Jedi then betray Sol, I wonder if that sets her on a path that's similar to or closer aligned to Chimaire's goals of the Jedi say, I can't exist. They're a bad institution. You know, more down that path. If now she's also acting on revenge for both her family and for Sol as well. And that even though he lied to her all this time, he was still that father figure in her life. And that there is complication to her feelings about him because of that. Once she works through her anger, if she does, right? I think she could not work through that anger too. I do think there, like you said, I think there's a high possibility that it does get pinned on him. And I think that would fall in line with what the Jedi do as an institution. Mm-hmm. And because if we take it back to the first episode, the conversation between Vernestra and Sol when they're going after May at the very beginning, Vernestra's like, we gotta pin this on her. We got to find the person, and justice is swift and no one will be the wiser and there's no reason to distrust the Jedi. So I think if they could put it that it was actually this rogue Jedi all along and don't worry, we got him. No more problems.
And he's been covering up something bigger for a while.
Yeah, if they even share that too, right?
if even a little piece of that comes out though, it feels a little bit more justified from the Jedi. Because it's like, oh, you guys kept this big secret or something. And it was not like the fact that Osha had a twin wasn't even in her file.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a sense of concealment that the Jedi, if they knew about it from that time period, would be really mad at. And of course, now there's no other witnesses. So.
Yeah, I think.
Except for May.
Yeah. Yeah. I think ultimately for the Jedi, it will be for the Jedi as an institution, it will be whatever makes them look the best. That's the story they're going to run with. And if they find out that Sol and the others were hiding this huge story for all those years, we don't even have to talk about it because now they're all gone. So we don't even actually have to admit that we had these four Jedi holding this dark, dark secret of their crimes for all these years. We don't have to tell anyone about it because they're all dead. Like you said, no witnesses left. It's going to be a doozy. And I think ultimately what we've been talking about of it will come down to May and Osha. They've got to come back together, right? And they've got to make a choice. They've got to make their own choice finally. Choices. I don't know.
I know. Let's spend the last bit of our conversation talking more about the song that played at the end of the credits. First off, how did you feel about the song at the end of the credits?
This song has been out for a while, actually. I know. A lot of people who didn't know that, and I feel bad that
guys,
we didn't mention
it. Good.
No,
we did. We mentioned it last week.
Did we?
Yes. Or the week before. Yes, we did. And it's so good.
Yeah, it's
guys, good. You got to be bopping to it. It's been on like number one on my playlist for weeks.
It's by Victoria Monet. It's called The Power of Two. And it was so cool to hear it play in the credits this week. One of the little sections of the lyrics that I put in our notes, the song goes, I feel the shame when they call me your name. Can you feel the same when they say you're to blame? Like war with myself, it's a losing game. Twin flame. Twin flame, twin flame. And these just feel so pertinent to the show. I would love to know about the process of writing the lyrics, how much whoever wrote them knew about what was happening in the show. But just the fact that May and Osha have gotten switched and like Sol switches them multiple times and then they themselves switch places and someone like May is blamed for everything that happened on Brundok when it wasn't actually her fault at all. And that someone like Osha is ashamed that of what May did, but it's all built on a lie, right? I don't know. There's just a lot to play with. And even the lyric, like, war with myself, it's a losing game. Now that we understand that they are identical twins in every sense of the word, even genetically or force in the force, their symbionts and things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, the song is really good and it's very ominous and yeah, recommend.
Fully recommend. It should be on your playlist. One thing to mention is that, you know, the song heavily features Twin Flame, right? Mm-hmm. The concept of Twin Flame. And it's pretty cool that there's an actual Twin Flame. When May lights the fire, you see this log of fire, and then on top of it is two flames, yeah. Like two smaller flames. Mm-hmm. And as she stares at it, and I thought it was an interesting moment in episode 3 as well. And I just want to comment that the look of regret on her face too after that, when clearly she has sort of disrupted the concept of the twin flame, even though I don't think the concept of a twin flame can be disrupted. And that's the whole point of the song, I think, is that they're, you know, forever connected symbionts with each other, like you said, and genetically connected. But in that moment, she lets the flame spread and destroys the two smaller flames together. So just really interesting. I think the concept of shame is really curious that is throughout the song. I feel the shame when they call me your name, like you commented on. I think we haven't necessarily seen May feel, I guess last episode we did, but it wasn't as obvious, I guess, as it could be about feeling shame about switching places or anything like that. So, and I wonder if by the end when she perhaps begins to understand what Sol was going through when he ties her up and wants to tell her about what happened on Brendog, I wonder if she'll start to feel some shame about masquerading, because I don't think we really saw that in episode 3.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder. I'm not sure. She has nothing to apologize for.
I know. That's the thing. Yeah. She's never done a single thing wrong in her life.
Not
just kidding,
one but, single thing.
Yeah. Just, I don't know. Love the song. If it's on your playlist, it should be. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Truly, Caitlin and I have been listening to it for weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's still so much more to talk about with this episode. And like, we didn't really even spend that much time on Torvin or really Kelnaka.
I feel like we did it.
I feel like we
did.
I just feel like there's so much to talk about with it, but it just means we'll get to come back to these characters and to this series as a whole, because I know you and I were talking before we started recording about rewatching everything before the finale next week. And I think a lot of things will look different on our, like a marathon, a binge watch, basically, now that we have this missing piece of Brendog. And it'll be great to kind of watch the show through the lens of already knowing what happened on Brendog and, you know, thinking about our characters' perspectives then. So
yeah, and I think that's how the show really lends itself. Mm-hmm. It's been so fun to talk about, I want to say, and every week having something to speculate about, to discuss, to dive into. It's really great. It's been sort of the most fun series to have week to week, I think. Mm-hmm. The conversations have just been really interesting, and I've really enjoyed thinking about each episode each week. And I feel like you said, I do think this series just lends itself as we were getting that to the heart of the series. I think Leslie said that weeks ago about how you're kind of following us down until you get to the center, to the heart, to figure out what really the series is really saying. And I think we're probably one more bombshell away from, like, I feel like next week we're going to get like a big discovery that might change our entire perspective of the series.
Oh, gosh.
We'll see. I don't know what that could be, but we'll see. And I feel like on that note, this show might have really high rewatch value.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm excited about that.
Especially if Osha stays on the dark side,
yeah,
with Chimere, I think that's huge intrigue. And I will say that in the Nerdist article, Leslie was asked about a season 2. And she said there are conversations happening that she's aware of, but she doesn't know anything. So
it's giving NDA.
To me, I'm like, oh, people are talking about it. It's happening. And I just think it would be so great. I love the idea. We talked about like what a satisfactory ending would be, but in the way that it could still be open-ended. And I think that, you know, seeing what Osha and May's choices are, having them make that choice is satisfactory. And then the open-endedness is then where do they go from there? Like if we're looking at Osha, for example, and we say that the choice she makes is to, you know, learn about the Force with Chimer, that's a satisfactory ending. But then the open-endedness is that we would, in like a season two, we would get to see them actually being a master and apprentice. And then for May as well, what her choice ends up being too. I don't know. I am so here for season two. And I want
to. We need it.
We need it so bad. I just, 8 episodes honestly feels too short. I will say kind of my one critique is that 8 episodes does feel too short. And I kind of felt like, I felt, honestly, at some points in this episode, I felt a little frustrated because I felt like I was rewatching episode 3 again. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I know that's kind of that's the point, obviously, because now it's from the Jedi's perspective. But I do think it could have been tightened up a little bit, maybe. And that I do think it would have been beneficial to see what exactly Sol told May, or even her reaction, and maybe even Osha finding out the truth, even if it was just like a couple seconds at the end, to really get their emotions as we head into the finale. I do think that would have been helpful. But overall, I just, 8 episodes is too short, and I wish there was more. Like Andor had 12 episodes, and that felt really good as a series length. So I hope that there's more to come from The Acolyte, not just next week. And I hope we don't have to wait 18 years for it.
I think 2 years minimum, which is just rough. It's really hard that we're at this point in entertainment. That's
just, I've seen so many people lately being like, we used to get 24 episode seasons every single year of the same show. And I just need them to figure that out and get that ball rolling now.
Yeah, some of that conversation I'm really sympathetic to based off of the strike.
Correct. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, like House of the Dragon is only 8 episodes this season. Last season it was 10. HBO series are usually 10. 10 feels like a good number. I would have been happy with 10 episodes for The Acolyte if we're in that, you know, bottle series type situation. Mm-hmm. And it's 8 episodes. House of the Dragon is 8 this season. It feels short. I don't know what the decision is with that, cutbacks or the strike or something. I don't know. But I feel like we're kind of dealing with that right now in the entertainment industry, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's the case for The Acolyte, which has been in production for like 4 years. So yeah, I don't know. Regardless, I can't wait for the finale next week. It's been so fun. And I know there's so much that we didn't talk about, but we'll make sure we talk about it next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the point.
Thank you guys so much for listening in on this conversation. And thank you so much for joining us on Acolyte coverage. One more week left. We would love to hear your theories. What is a satisfactory ending for you? What do you see happening? What are these choices that May and Osha are going to make? What's going to happen with the Jedi? Please let us know. You can find us on Twitter, X at SkytalkersPod, or our personal handles. Mine is at Caitlin Plusher and Charlotte's is at Clarity. We also have our website, skytalkers.com, our Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. Those are all good places to find us. And if you have a couple of seconds and would like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would appreciate it so much as it helps other people find our show. You can also screenshot that you're listening to the show in real time and tag us, and we will reshare it on whatever social media platform you're posting on. We would love to see your thoughts there as well. And if you're interested in other ways to support us and how to get involved in our Discord community, you can head on over to our Patreon and check out our reward tiers there.
I want to say a huge thank you to these patrons: Imbecilius, Tim, Paul, Nina, Tom, Megan, Linda, Alexa, Kelly, Charlotte, Anna, Chuck, Allison, Kylie, Olivia, Simon, Triumphant Ewok, GMO, Draconius Rex, Jenny, Adam, Lucy, and Greg. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Yes, thank you guys so much. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.